You're listening to Alien X Radio, and this is your afternoon interview. And on the line right now, I've got my guest. He is a writer, and he has pretty much had his hand in almost every single episode that we've seen of the Friday the 13th series of movies. It's Mr. Victor Miller. Sir, how are you doing tonight?
Well, I have never been inside the mothership before, and so it's absolutely wonderful.
That is awesome. See, I beam people aboard all the time, and I abduct people into the mothership, and they usually leave having a richer life for it.
Well, it didn't hurt at all, so I'm looking forward to it.
Just a little pinch, right?
Yeah.
Well, sir, I do thank you very much for taking the time to contact me here inside the mothership on behalf of myself and my producer, Michael Klinkenbeard. We thank you for your time. Let's just get right to it. I mean, he told me that you were the writer of, he mentioned Friday the 13th, 1, and then he mentioned 3 and 10. And then I go and look at IMDb, and you had your hand in, it looks like, every single one except for like two of them. Is this correct?
Well, actually, my hand is in all of the sequels by remote control. The only one I actually wrote was Friday the 13th, the original, and the sequels. Each one, I get a check when they make one, and because it's based on characters that I invented. But quite honest with your listeners, Alien Stone. I had nothing to do with my hands actually on any of the sequels. And in fact, it is a well-known fact that I have not even seen any of the sequels.
You haven't seen any of them?
Not a single one. I know that in number 3, they gave Jason a hockey mask. And I read the screenplay for the alleged remake. So I know basically what's in that one. But no, the funny thing about sequels is that they're all supposed to cost less than the one that preceded it, and because they tend to make less money. And so having had a major success in number 1, I was too expensive to be the writer on 2 through whatever it is. And I went on about my life and cash checks as they came in. But otherwise, you see, The real deal is that in my movie, the villain was Mrs. Voorhees, Jason's mama.
Oh, sure.
And I have a very, very close relationship in my heart with Mrs. Voorhees, because she was the mother I never had. If I had drowned, thanks to the campers making love off in the boonies, my mother would have come to me and said, you only have yourself to blame. Whereas Jason's mother starts killing people and never stops until she is herself killed. And that's the kind of mother I wanted.
Yeah, she was really sticking up for her kid, for real.
Exactly. And so, you know, in my film, as far as I was concerned when I wrote it, because who knew, you know, we had no expectations that this was going to be the cultural icon that it has become. And so in my film, Jason was quite dead. I never intended him to be alive except as a dream sequence at the very end. And so, you know, the fact that they brought Jason back to life through strange circumstances was something that happened long after I had gone on to other things.
But I mean, you're the one that dreamed up the whole camping in the woods genre. I mean, you're the one that started it. Then, if you did you wrote the original blueprint for the slasher film. Is this correct?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Again, what I was trying to do, and what I actually did, you know, what I was trying to do was earn a living, and so I did the best job I knew how to, and I had no, as I said, I had no idea whatsoever that this thing was going to become, you know, who knew that in 25 years or whatever it is that I'd be going to do. I mean, this tomorrow I leave for Indianapolis to do a personal appearance with the film on Friday night, and I have gone to horror conventions all over the country, and I have had a wonderful time. I hang out with Ari Lehman whenever we're in the same convention together, and he is the son. You know, he's my strange son somehow, because I am the father of the first Jason.
Yeah.
And I like to think that he was a son who was really badly toilet trained. he's the kid you never wanted to point to with pride, but he's been very successful, so I love him dearly.
Yeah, he was really awesome because I had him on my show as well just a couple weeks back, actually, and he was a fantastic guest talking about his band and the slasher sauce that his band produces. I've also had on my show Adrian King has been on my show also from the original. I really love the entire series. I've also gone into the other films as well, but those are just from the first one.
Right. Yeah. No. I have no complaint about the sequels. I mean, it's a wonderful thing that that Friday the 13th has kept on going, and that I have no idea what Paramount's going to do now that they have the rights back. I assume they're going to do something. I would love if Paramount's listening to be hired to write a prequel, because I would be eminently qualified to write the prequel for the whole Friday the 13th series, and see the creation of Jason and how Mrs. Voorhees was done in by the guy who left her to raise this kid all by herself. And that would be, I think, a wonderful cap on my career, but I have my doubts that they'll hire me.
Well, you never know. I mean, Ari, he was talking to me about the same thing, how it was back in the what he called the correct hands, the ones that started it all. So you never know. They might have they might inspire to do things the right way again, and go back to the roots, which would involve calling you, I would imagine.
May it be so. I'd love to do it, because it's I have come to meet, at first when I was invited to, the first one I did was a Scarefest in Kentucky years ago in Lexington, and I went with some fear and trepidation, not knowing who these strange people were that fell in love with my movie. And I met them and loved them, and we've been having a great time. And, it's a whole community that I had no intention of ever knowing. I mean, I had worked with Sean Cunningham on, we lived down the street from each other in Connecticut. And we were just trying to earn a living, to write a movie or to do a movie that would be successful and make us famous and rich and all kinds of other things. We did a couple of nice family films before this one, thinking that maybe America really did want family films, and it turns out they didn't. Because we made a nice one, a ripoff of Bad News Bears, and then we did one that Steve Miner came up with the idea for. Called Manny's Orphans, which was about a nice little soccer team. Then one day Sean called me and said, Halloween is making a lot of money. Let's rip it off. And I said, well, I'll have to go see it. So I went to see Halloween, figured out how you write a screenplay, at least a horror screenplay, because Hill and Carpenter really just did an incredible job. They did such a beautifully structured piece that I learned very quickly how to structure a thing. And I basically sat down and said, all right, I need a place where a bunch of randy kids can hang out, where they cannot be helped by the adults. Nobody can come save them. There's no cavalry. There's no National Guard nearby. And they have to figure it out. And if they get lucky and get laid, they get to get killed. It's just one of those wonderful Victorian parts of the horror movie that are fun to do. So I did it, and the rest is this incredible thing that grew while I wasn't looking.
Behind your back, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's gotten absolutely huge. I mean, there's no doubt that it is one of the biggest movies in our horror culture background, really, is the original Friday the 13th. I mean, I remember still when Part 3 had come out at the drive-in, they had they were playing all three of them back to back to back. And my parents loaded up the van and the lawn chairs and everything. We drove out to the drive-in, and we had all the lawn chairs sitting out, and we watched all three of them in a row. I mean, those are great days, man. Those are great days. And I've loved horror films ever since. So thank you, sir. I appreciate that very much.
Yeah. Well, it was certainly fun.
So have you worked on other horror films? I mean, obviously you said you haven't worked on the other in this series, but have you worked on other horror films since that one?
Yeah, and for the 20 minutes that I was hot in Hollywood in 1980, I got hired by Columbia to write another Columbia Pictures to write another horror film, and I did, and it got put into turnaround, which is basically the truth is that Hollywood likes to buy the screenplays for horror movies, but really can't make them because they become too expensive when a major studio actually has to budget the whole film. Because they end up charging against the movie, they charge the parking, the real estate, the taxes, and everything else. So as happened with Friday the 13th, Sean found independent financing, made the movie, and then Paramount bought it to distribute it. But Paramount didn't have to do all that fancy bookkeeping, where our budget was around $600,000. And if Paramount Pictures had decided to make it, it would have cost way over $2 to $3 million. And so that's just the way the business is. If you can get independent financing for your film and come to a distributor with a really nice piece of work, then you can get it shown. It's a very, very strange business, you know, because we're the redheaded stepchildren of the movie business. We're not the ones where you have the $3 million actors signing, and that's your first expense is a $3 million actor, and that's not even a really expensive one.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, the money that gets dumped into it, the money hose that gets turned on by the big companies that are making things don't necessarily produce a better movie. They just spend more money on it, you know, and I think that, yeah. Like you said, if you were just to dump a bunch of money into the original Friday the 13th, I don't think it would have been necessarily a better film. It would have just been more expensive, I think.
I think you're absolutely right, and there's a kind of a wonderful primitive quality to Friday the 13th, which is a function of the fact that, it was made on a low budget. So it didn't have all of the hype and the overkill. I see horror, I watch a lot of horror films on my DirecTV, and I've seen ones where they've actually tried to use big name actors, and they don't do all that well because it takes a long time for them to get their money back. Whereas if you come in with a low budget film that's actually really scary and really fun, then you get your initial investment back much quicker. So that's really the way to go. And I think it's what attracts so many of your fans on the mothership to it, because there's so many ways now that you can make a movie on the cheap, and if it's any good, you can get the backing for it, and then you can get a distributor. And there are lots of other ways around that, and this is all before where you sort of put yourself on the internet and said, everybody give me $25 and I'm going to make a movie.
Well, that works sometimes.
Yeah, no, and I think that's the way it's going to happen. The CGI alone on these movies is enough to choke a horse. What I love about Friday the 13th is Tom Savini's work as doing the special effects. Compared to CGI, they may look primitive. I mean, certainly when Mrs. Voorhees' head is cut off, you could certainly do it better with CGI, but I don't, the CGI all looks so fake. It's prettier, it's realer, it's less embarrassing, but I don't think it has the absolute gut hit that special effects that are done in real time have. And I think that's one of the things that makes Friday the 13th so special, that it's not all perfect. It's rough. It's fun. And it's sort of understandable. Whereas these, when you get fancy, you get screwed.
Yeah. Cause it's just like the Star Wars movies when they did the second set of movies, but actually came out first, the original movies. There were scenes that they couldn't do because they didn't have the ability, and then when they re-released them, they would introduce some of this CGI into the movie when they showed Jabba the Hutt all of a sudden in a scene that was never in the original Star Wars. And it looked absolutely terrible. It looked absolutely terrible to me.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, obviously Hollywood has been taken over years ago by the banks, and the decisions are being made there by the money guys. And so in order to get a banker interested, you have to come up with some name that he or she has read in the New York Times somewhere. And whereas, you know, I've got friends, one of the things I do, and I would love to get this across to your listeners, is that I read people's screenplays for free on the internet. You know, if they send me a screenplay, I'll read it and give them notes, because I really believe that the horror film, you know, obviously there are other ways to go, low budget art films, etc. But I have a special place in my heart for guys who are trying to do exactly what I did, which is to write a horror film that people will like, even though they don't have a lot of backing and they don't have a major studio. But so, you know, if they want to send it to me at it's victormiller.com, it's my website, I will read them. And I don't need to steal their ideas. What I'm working on now, in the last year and a half, after Friday the 13th, I did a couple of more screenplays, and then I did A Stranger is Watching with Sean for MGM, and that had Kate Mulgrew in it and Rip Torn, and that didn't do as well for all kinds of reasons, one of which was the publicity that said from the people that brought you Friday the 13th, and this wasn't a horror movie. It was a terror film based on a Mary Higgins Clark novel. So that didn't do all that well, but it's after that I got a call from somebody who said, you want to write soap opera, and I said, I don't know, I've never seen one. So the next thing I knew, I spent 25 years writing One Life to Live, All My Children, Guiding Light, General Hospital, Another World, and Around and Around, and that was really great. There was something about the weekly paycheck that helped a lot. And so I retired from that business in 2005, and then took off about 3 years not writing anything. And in the last, in the last two or three years, I wrote one with these two guys I met at the Big Bear Lake Horror Film Festival. We wrote that on Skype. It's a big plug for Skype. You can write great screenplays together. Then I did another one with another screenplay with my son, about a father and son who are having trouble, which was fun. And then now I'm helping one crew with a screenplay they've got, and I'm co-authoring two others with these other people. And it's great fun. Who knows whether we're going to ever get the backing, because money is really hard to come by these days. Mm-hmm. But it's there's really... What I learned in the daytime television business was that we were writing, there were five of us or six of us sitting around a table coming up with 5 hours of television a week, and it got to be fun writing with other people. So I have much more fun this morning at 7 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time. I was on with a guy in Maryland, and we're writing a horror film together, and it is great fun. I don't know whether it'll ever go anywhere, but we sat there and came up with some great stuff and laughed for an hour and a half. And it's a wonderful thing to do. As I say, it's nice if you can make money, but it's certainly a lot more fun than sitting around watching Judge Judy.
Judge Judy. That's funny.
I love Judge Judy. I mean, she's everything I know I learned from Judge Judy. And I certainly feel superior to all of her clients.
I think one of my favorite things that Judge Judy ever did, she got done hearing this woman's whole story. Then she turned to the guy and she goes, "Now what's your story?" He goes, "Well, Your Honor," she goes, "shut up, I don't believe you," immediately. That was as far as he got. "Shut up, I don't believe you. Judgment for the plaintiff." And I was like, wow.
And I love that. I mean, she rules, she has a universe. It's a very small universe, but she is totally in charge of it. And, I love the way, because I look with her eyes at the defendant, the plaintiff, the defendant, whatever it is, and some guy comes smirking at her, and she hates smirking guys. She hates young men who think they're all that, and it's great fun to watch that.
And she just tears them apart.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the only time they're ever going to hear that. And they're going to go back to their, you know, Oshkosh, whatever it is, and think and go right back to what they were doing before. I wish I thought Judge Judy would change their lives.
Well, I'm going to definitely be sending an email over to you at victormiller.com, by the way, because I, like I said, I've done several different screenplays myself. I've produced three of them into my own films, shooting them myself, but I have one that I've been meaning to do, and I just keep putting it off and putting it off. So it'd be nice to get a professional opinion on how it sounds. It's an older script, but, you know.
No, it'd be my pleasure. I, you know, sometimes I get two or three to read in a week, and it takes a while, but I get to all of them, usually, I've learned an awful lot in the 25 years in daytime television. I've learned more about structure than I ever learned anywhere else, you know, because you really have to come up with this stuff and you have to pull it out of you know where. So I tend to know what can work and what doesn't work, and so that it gives me a great deal of pleasure to see that guys are going to make the film that I helped them with. And I don't look for money. I don't look for credit. And it's just fun. I mean, I'm retired. In 1974, I was made a member of the Writers Guild of America, which is an AFL-CIO union. And, it protects screenwriters, television and screen. You put in, part of what you make and the producer does. And so I'm on a pension from the Writers Guild. And I got to tell you, I'm living large and having a lovely time.
Awesome. Because some guys, because people were getting their heads chopped off and Kevin Bacon died in one of your movies.
Yes. That was actually when I'm asked about, were you on the set? No. I went there one day, one weekend they were shooting, and fortunately for me, it was the weekend that that Tom Savini put the arrow through, and his assistant put the arrow through Kevin Bacon's chest, neck, whatever, which, as anybody who's gone to nursing school can tell you, is a physical impossibility, but it didn't seem to hurt the movie in any way, because Mrs. Voorhees would have had to have a hell of a backswing underneath the bed to bring a hunting arrow up through the mattress, the inner spring, his spine, all of his muscles, and out through his chest.
Oh, yeah, she could be on American Gladiator.
Exactly. <Yeah. laughs> But it was great fun to watch, and it's indelible in my memory as Savini's assistant came out from underneath the bed, and he had Savini had rigged the hollowed out arrow with a piece of surgical tubing connected to it to a bladder that was full of sheep's blood, and the assistant came out from under the bed covered in sheep's blood, and everybody said, "What the hell happened?" And he said, "Well, when I squeezed the ball, I shoved the arrow up through his thing, and I started squeezing the ball, and the hose clamp let go where the arrow and the surgical tubing met. And so he said, I had to blow the blood up through the arrow by mouth."
What a mess.
Because they could only do the shot once. It was just too expensive to do more than once. And so he took one for the team, and the effect was absolutely riveting. So it was great for me to see.
See, it's one thing to say that about a different movie or something, to say that you had to do it with your mouth, because it's usually a synthesized or a fake or an edible blood. This was sheep's blood. It was actual real blood. It's kind of gross.
Yeah, no, it was really gross, but he got a standing ovation from everybody standing around.
Well, Tom Savini has never been shy of putting people in gross situations.
He's great. I mean, the first time I met him, it was in Sean's backyard, and he had driven up from Pennsylvania and sat down, and he totally marked up the script, and I looked over his shoulder and saw all these marks, and he was... I had just typed this stuff up. I was just imagining this stuff. I had no idea. I'd never written a horror film before in my life. And he was saying things like, "Well, on page 42, you got an axe in the face. Now, do you want a real axe and a fake face, or you want a fake axe and a real face?" And I was going, "What?" And he was asking Sean, who was going to direct. And Sean said, "Well, how about real face and fake axe?" So, you know, the axe is made out of styrofoam, painted perfectly, and then glued to the poor girl's face. But it's an incredible business, and I love the people in it. I don't think we get, you know, as I said, it's the redheaded stepchild of the movie business, but not when you ask the fans.
Wow. Wow. That is awesome. Well, sir, I do thank you very much for joining me on the show today. It's been awesome hearing the stories. I always love to hear people that are involved in the Friday the 13th series because, like I said, I've had tons of people on my show from all the different films, some of the other directors and people who have had their hands in writing and other actors and such. So you just it's glad to get the guy that started it all. Appreciate that.
My delight, and I wish you all the luck in the world with your broadcast because I'm a child of radio, and I'm glad to see it coming back.
Oh, yeah, it's coming back big time now that the internet's here.